Welcome to episode 93 of the Golf Talk Podcast, take two. This is Eric Proseski in Pennsylvania. Alan Olson joins me from BFE or something.
Bemidji, Minnesota.
What?
Bemidji, Minnesota.
Bemidji?
Bemidji. Yeah.
Bemidji. All right. Well, Enby Park wins the U.S. Women's Open at a course near and maybe dear to your heart. I don't know if it was too dear, but it was near to you, right?
Fortunately, I'm not that able to play it.
So Enby Park defends or wins the U.S. Women's Open. She knocks off Paula Creamer. She knocks off Helen Alfredson, was kind of up there. But Annika Sorenstam and Lorena Cho really nowhere near the mix. Annika Sorenstam had the eagle the last hole to shoot a 78 and break 80 the final day. So not a good week for either of those two. But Paula Creamer and Stacey Lewis, the amateur that just turned pro not too long ago, were in the running for quite a while and shot themselves out of it. Basically, I'm not sure if they choked or what. Not a good day for Paula Creamer or Stacey Lewis.
No, I mean, it basically came down to them falling apart. Enby Park played solid, and I don't know, it reminded me a lot of the Masters. Nobody really made too many moves. Enby Park had a big enough lead that, other than dumping a few into the pond at number 18, she wasn't going to lose.
Right. So, disappointing. Paula Creamer, still the best American golfer yet to win a major. Probably the best golfer, period, yet to win a major on the LPGA Tour. So, be interesting to see. You know, this U.S. Open is kind of made for her. She's not the longest hitter out there, but she tends to be a little more accurate. Lack of a short game really hurt her in the final round. She just couldn't get it done. I'm not sure how much of the blame belongs on her pink golf ball. She played three good rounds with a white one, and then she switches to pink and shoots 78.
Some real questionable decisions, too. I'm not sure caddy should have overruled her on a couple of shots, you know, going for a couple par fives. Yeah, just didn't play very well, didn't play very smart in the fourth round, and kind of threw it away.
Well, she's got two more chances this year. One more chance. They only have one more major. They have the Women's Open. They've already had the Dinosaur, which is the Kraft Nabisco now. They've had the U.S. Women's Open, and they had the McDonald's LPGA Championship. So only one more chance, and Paula likes to go over to Europe, so we'll see how she does over there. But didn't get it done in the U.S. Women's Open. Congratulations to Enby Park. Stuart Cenk finally closed out a win. This is a couple of weeks ago, June 22nd, so we're a little behind, like we said. Stuart Cenk finally closes out a win at the Travelers Championship. Just a quick nod to him, as he was having trouble closing out things earlier this year. I think in the Pods Championship, he led by two or three going into the final round and failed to hold on over Sean O'Hare. Right?
Yeah, you know, kudos to Stuart Cenk. He, you know, kind of bagged on him a little earlier there, not being able to close the deal, and holds off Tommy Armour III and last year's champion Hunter Mahan. So it's some pretty stiff competition there with Mahan. And I was really surprised he moved up not only to, I believe, third in the third in the FedEx, but he's sixth in the world.
Yeah, fairly impressive. And yeah, I was impressed by Hunter Mahan. I thought for a while we might have another Boo Weekly thing where he wins the same tournament for his first two PGA Tour wins back-to-back years, but couldn't quite get that last little bit he needed to tie or pull ahead of Stuart Cenk. So credit to Stuart Cenk and also to Hunter Mahan, who apparently likes the course. Kenny apparently likes Warwick Hills enough that he won the Buick Open at 19-under, two ahead of the nearest finishers. One of those nearest finishers was Woody Austin, who said that he should have won by 10 strokes.
We'll just continue to live in Woody's world, and kudos to Kenny Perry for winning. I think this pretty much wraps up his spot on the Ryder Cup. You know, still would prefer to see him play in the majors, but that's his own choice.
He's not going to play the British Open either.
No,
So here we have a guy who has said, I'm going to making the Ryder Cup team my number one priority. He does that by kind of gaming the system a little bit, just trying to rack up points, not necessarily trying to further his career or do anything. The Ryder Cup is about, say, three things. One, it's about playing against top players. Two, it's about playing sometimes 36 holes in a day. And three, it's about pride and nationality. So on each of those, playing against top players, Kenny Perry has chosen to skip two majors this year. On playing 36 holes a day, that's why he opted out of trying to qualify for the U.S. Open, because it was a 36-hole qualifier in one day. And on the issue of nationality and pride in your country, he skips our national championship. So, quite frankly, that combined with the fact that Padraig Harrington and, Paul McGinley did not fare very well. I think they won one point between them when the Ryder Cup was held in Ireland. I'm not sure I'd want Kenny Perry on my team. If he was ninth in the Ryder Cup listings, or 10th, I guess, with Tiger Woods still at the top. If he was the ninth guy and the first alternate, I'm not sure I'd pick him if I was Paul Azinger.
No.
He's hot right now, but I mean, he's streaky. I don't know that he's going to be hot in the fall, and then there's all this other stuff on top of it.
Yeah, it's just, he's peaking at the wrong time. And I don't know, can he continue to do it? Hard to say. I mean, he's going to be playing in Milwaukee opposite the British Open, which you know, great course, love Milwaukee, but it's a weak field.
Oh, and his excuse for that is, I've already committed. Sorry, I don't think the guys over there are really going to care. You ain't Tiger Woods. They're not going to care that much if you just show up and don't go to the British Open instead. It's I don't know. It's a rationalization or something. I don't know.
I think
it's weak. It's weak, Kenny. It's weak.
Yeah, I think at this point he's put so much emphasis and so much pressure on trying to make the Ryder Cup team. I think
you can almost say he's made it at this point. Mm-hmm. So go play the British Open.
I think he's putting way too much pressure on himself. I just don't see how it's going to work in September with him and in his home state. Who knows? Maybe he does. But like you said, you know, the guys last year or 2 years ago didn't fare so well in Ireland.
Right. Well, Anthony Kim, I've been rallying for young players to make the Ryder Cup team because I think that's something that we need. I think we need some young players who are eager to show the world what they can do. And Anthony Kim would be one of those players. He gets the win this past weekend at the AT&T National. So he wins where Tiger Woods is the defending champion. Then he wins Tiger Woods Tournament. It's kind of like the KJ Choi of last year where he wins Jack's Tournament at Memorial. And then he wins Tiger's Tournament. Anthony Kim wins at Wachovia. And then he wins the AT&T National. An impressive win. He came from behind, had it on cruise control, and won by two.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is unbelievable. I mean, he fired at the flag when he needed to. He played conservative when he had to, and made some great putts. And, you know, other than Peter Costas talking about him choking down on his club, no, it's a great win. I mean, I think you could say right now,
he's very solid.
Yeah, he's the...
right now.
Yeah.
And his wins have been spread out over a decent period of time, so you can't necessarily call him streaky. It's not like he's picked up two wins in a month or something, you know, kind of like Kenny. His wins are spaced out a little bit more, so a little more meat to this. I mean, at this point, a lot has been made of the talk that he laid out a couple of years ago or at the beginning of the year and, you know, challenging Tiger and all that stuff. You know, at this point, he can kind of he's toned off on that, and that's fine, but he could almost talk about that a little bit now. About wanting to succeed, and not necessarily anything about Tiger, but before it was just cockiness with nothing to back it up. At this point, he has two PGA Tour wins, which, you know, ties him with Phil Mickelson and Kenny Perry. You know, it's still a good season. You know, it's obviously nothing. The press is going to be eager to say, oh, it's a challenger to Tiger. And, you know, it's not, but he is having a good year. So,
yeah, I mean,
it bodes well for possible stuff in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's positioning himself very nicely to be on the Ryder Cup team, you know, that fresh young blood, and he's confident. You can say cocky if you want, and he gets it done.
We'll be right back with Brett Porath, director of Titleist Fitting Works, in a little interview, so stay tuned for that.
I mark my Titleist with a black dot over the number one.
With two blue dots.
With a red line through the Titleist.
With a DH over the Titleist.
Just two little dots.
I mark my golf ball pretty simply.
It's kind of complicated.
Holy orange with a striped black line.
Just like this.
Two dots with a black dot over the number.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark a golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Welcome back. This week we're talking with Brett Porath. He's the director of Titleist Fitting Works, and we're going to be talking with him about the SureFit system that's new this year. Welcome, Brett.
Great. Thank you very much.
I guess we'll start off by simply asking you, what is SureFit and how does it benefit both the golfer as well as the vast network of fitters that you have?
Well, the SureFit system is interchangeable heads and shafts right now for fitting 6-irons. And the interchangeability is from a coupling on the bottom of the shaft that joins the head so that the performance is the same as the club that people get when they buy and order clubs. So it's a club fitting tool that really allows golfers to try, and more likely, the exact combination of head and shaft that they can experience when they purchase. So there's less of the question of, well, I like this shaft, but I didn't get to try it in the head that I like. And so they can dial in on the exact combination more quickly. Fitters, when we hear from them, say that the larger matrix really allows them to explore areas of interest when they see a golfer swing and they know their tendencies. They can try those exact combinations. You've got anywhere from 150 to 420 different combinations in the cart, and that really gives them more creativity and more options to try with the consumers.
Brett, several other club manufacturers seem to have latched upon the idea of having the interchangeable shafts, much more so for the drivers, and are selling those interchangeable clubs to golfers. Titleist, on the other hand, is using the technology, but only for fitting. What's your take on that?
Well, our main focus when we brought it to market is, you know, how do we help golfers' performance? That's really you know, are central to our mission when we do clubs, when we work on clubs. And we've elected to use the technology, as you said, as a fitting tool. And that largely came from consumer research. So for the past year or so, we've been really talking to consumers, trying to learn more about their habits and what they'd like to see. And some of the things we learned is that many of them didn't know about the rule change before or after it was enacted in January 1st of this year. We had a lot of golfers have some concerns about shaft feel, meaning that, you know, they go to great lengths to select a shaft that feels for them. If you're a stiff tip, heavyweight shaft person, they're pretty reluctant to change that feel and that performance because of weather conditions or something temporarily like that. And I think it sums up. We talked to one consumer. It was great. He, in kind of the open feedback, just said, well, I just went through a fitting to determine what's best as far as shaft and head. Why would I want to change that? So we didn't see that consumers found a tremendous amount of value with the thought of changing out heads and shafts. Doesn't mean that that won't happen in the future, but for right now, we see it much more as a fitting tool than you buy that exact club.
Yeah, that kind of ties into the next question we have, which was if you ever saw a point where, even for irons or something, where you might be able to build a set of clubs with the based on the SureFit system right there on site, not necessarily so that they would change them later, but just to speed up delivery of clubs to the customers.
You know, it's a great question because we were thinking along the same ways that, you know, that instant delivery is a pretty powerful thing. When we ask consumers, they really, at least in the surveys and the actions that we saw, they didn't see waiting for the assembly as a big problem. I think, you know, there's some equity built up in the trust that our procedures and our quality assurances are in place. And I think people maybe were a little nervous about doing that themselves. And I think the industry as a whole has made improvements over the recent years that we can deliver custom clubs much more quickly than in the past. So I think those two factors might be limiting the appeal. But as the rule and the clubs, you know, mature in the marketplace, we'll see what happens.
What has been the reaction, both positive and negative, by fitters who are using the SureFit system? And with that, are there any changes in the works based upon their feedback?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when you launch a system, you never 100% right until you hear back from people. So some of the opportunities, I think one of the things we learned is that, you know, there's no perfect shaft mix for everyone. Even with over 150 options in the SureFit cart, you know, many fitters, they have their personal favorites or properties that they'd like to see. And so we've done a test where we've added four different shafts, largely in the softer flex and an overlength option to address some of those concerns and allow people to customize that matrix a little bit. I think long-term, that's one of the advantages of interchangeable clubs is that people can customize a matrix based on their preferences and their membership as a whole. But I think some of the positives, which have been wonderful and overwhelmingly positive, the comments, I think the larger club matrix that we touched upon, there was an early concern that assembling clubs would be difficult. We had training sessions and online training seminars, and that's gone really well. People say it's easy to use, and I think that maybe is the primary thing that we've heard from fitters is that, you know, a cart that is compact and easy to transport to the range actually gets put on the range more often than not, you know, saved up when there's a specific fitting at a certain time. And so we found some value in making the cart as easy to use as possible. Yeah, we think actually we did some focus groups and brought fitters in and they had a big hand in designing the cart. So
yeah, you don't have to get the maintenance guys to drag it out to the range for you, like some of the bigger ones.
Yeah, every hurdle that you put in someone's place, whether it's a hurdle or a speed bump, you know, that makes it harder to do. So we're trying to make it easier.
Our last question here was the new 909 drivers, as well as Sherwood's hybrids and things that are coming out, are they going to be available in the SureFit system?
Yes, they are. I think one important note is, you know, our tour testing starts very early. You know, we're a long ways from launch. We test pretty rigorously on tour in advance of the product launch. Just recently at the AT&T, we had 41 drivers in play, nine of which are the 909 model. We were fortunate. We had 8 of 9 make the cut, and 2 of those players had top 10. So the early results from the testing have been good. I think the SureFit fairways and the hybrids, certainly a possibility for interchangeable fitting, but there's some challenges for that, both from a fitter standpoint and from our standpoint, that when you have multiple loft fairway woods and hybrid, then you need a shaft, the standard length of which changes. So the shaft matrix, if you wanted to offer just a couple versions in the standard length, the shaft matrix gets really large very quickly. And so we'll continue to use in the near future fairways and hybrids that are traditionally glued up. It's a little more feasible to get the hundreds and thousands of systems out in the marketplace. But for drivers, we are adding them to the cart. We use the existing carts, and they'll have that same larger matrix. Now, currently, most fitters have 6 to 10 drivers or so on site. With the SureFit system, we plan right now to have 112 different driver head shaft combinations and varying flexes and lengths. So the same versatility that we have in irons now will be added for drivers when the 909s hit the market.
That sounds great. And where can our readers and listeners go if they want to be fit for Titleist Club or to get more information?
Yeah, I think the best place is our website, which is fittingworks.com, and we have a Find a Fitter feature in that where you can do a distance-based search. And maybe more importantly, you can also look up the attribute of the fitters in your area, whether they have a launch monitor or not, whether they fit indoors or outdoors, and what fitting tools they have. So it's a great location for that. I think you can also encourage them to chat amongst each other, and you kind of learn who the keen fitters are in your area. And it's a great source of information to learn from other people's experience.
That's good advice. And we'd like to thank Brett Porath, director again of Titleist Fitting Works, for joining us this week. And we'll be right back.
I mark my Titleist with 3 red dots around the number.
3 crosses around the script.
With my initials.
With 2 blue dots. A black dot here.
Here and here.
Just like that.
With my family's initials.
With an R and a K.
With 3 blue dots.
Red dot.
Un pequeño círculo.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Welcome back. Thanks again to Brett for that bit of information and for talking with us. We'll move right into our Beating Balls segment here. It's an article published June 18th that asks if Tiger Woods' absence is good for golf. One word reply to that, Alan?
No.
Hey, we agree. Okay, moving on.
I mean, if you're a TV ad exec, you're worried about job security right about now.
The only people it's good for are the other guys on the PGA Tour who... I think I heard it said once that their average paycheck just went up 18% because that's the winner share of a PGA Tour event. So Tiger won't be there to get that 18%. So everybody else's expectations just went up 18%.
Congratulations to them.
Good for them. Tiger Woods has admitted to taking 2 drug tests. He's anal retentive and super controlling. So he's taken his own drug test just to make sure, like, some of his supplements and some of his amino acid things and things like that don't have any funny things in them or anything like that. So he's taken a few drug tests on his own just to make sure there are no surprises.
No, maybe whoever administers his drug testing can do it for the PGA Tour as well.
Yeah. Speaking of drug testing, it's begun. Charles Howell III and Davis Love III. A little awkward that we get both of the thirds in there, but they were some of the first guys tested. So maybe it was a little bit of a last in, first out kind of thing because we get the thirds. Maybe then we'll get to the juniors. And then after that, we'll get to the people without a suffix on their name. What do you think?
We got Tommy Armour the third. Never mind. And it was nice to see that good old Tim Fitchum was the first one to get it done. Because, you know, sitting at your computer with your BlackBerry, you got to really worry about that.
Yeah, so this seems to be a little better than the LPGA testing that we talked about a couple of episodes ago back in the spring, where Natalie Gulbis complained about how it took 2 hours. This takes 8 to 10 minutes and seems to be fairly efficient. So
yeah, they've got a good system set up. It's independent. And
kudos.
Like Charles Hall said, he doesn't expect to see any surprises, and at this point, I don't really either.
Right. The U.S. team, Nick Faldo believes they could rally around the fact that Tiger is not going to be there at the Ryder Cup. What do you think?
It's a possibility to sit there and say we could, you know, we won the Ryder Cup because Tiger's not here. Look at us.
I think his point too is. We've been trying to convince ourselves that we're the underdog on the U.S. team, and on paper we're really not, because we have, you know, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Jim Furyk, who were, you know, throughout much of the past 10 years, 1, 2, and 3 or so on the money list, and the world rankings and stuff. So, but now, without the number one, we can legitimately believe that we're underdogs and kind of play a little more gutsy, I think.
You know, you're going to have Anthony Kim's going to be on there. Well, you like Kenny Perry on there. I mean, depending on who some of the wild card picks are for Paul Azinger, I mean, you could have a really different team makeup to guys that are hungry and want to prove themselves, as well as, you know, have some pride in playing for the United States. So it could very well be a good thing. Obviously having Tiger would help. There again, you know, you always run to the problem of who you're going to pair him up with. Now you don't have to worry about that.
Right. In the same article as the Tiger talking about his drug testing, we get the news that Stacey Lewis, who finished wherever she finished highly
third
at the U.S. Women's Open. She didn't really collapse as much as Paula Creamer did, but she was the leader going into the final day. She's, again, just turned professional. It turns out her third place finish at the U.S. Women's Open, which would have netted her $162,000 and change, which would have gotten her to 80th on the LPGA Tour money list with just that amount of money on its own, doesn't count towards her LPGA status. She will have six events in which she can earn LPGA status, but the U.S. Women's Open does not count because, unlike the PGA Tour and the U.S. Open, the LPGA Tour doesn't co-sponsor or sanction the U.S. Women's Open. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but they should do that for exactly this kind of situation. They should do it retroactively. I don't care. You may have to apologize to the five or six women who might have done that in the past 10 years or so, but it's stupid not to have Stacey Lewis welcomed as a member of the tour and try to force her to get her card in six events.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bizarre policy, and it's not as if, you know, they're concerned about, you know, the one-hit wonder. Well, here she won with that short tournament in Northwest, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was like 36 holes or even 18 or something.
Yeah, she won holes. That. She's finished high in other tournaments.
She's not. She'll make it either way. Whether she has to do it through Q school or whether she does it in six events, she'll probably get on the LPGA Tour next year. I mean, it's almost a certainty as much as you can have in golf. But she shouldn't need to do that. She should be allowed to play, 12 events the rest of the year if she wanted to. Golf fans, I think, would like to see her in more events.
Oh, I think absolutely. It's a better policy, and hopefully they make the right decision and get her on tour as possible.
Final one here in Beating Balls, Congressional, the host of the AT&T National, didn't turn out quite as many top name players as we would have expected. I think three of the top 10 were there. Vijay Singh wasn't there. A small injury, maybe. Adam Scott supposedly still trying to recover from his broken pinky, but he played at the U.S. Open, so I'm not sure how much of an issue that should still be. Most notably, Phil Mickelson. Two players from the top 10, KJ Choi and Steve Stricker.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that, it's Tiger's tournament and
where's Phil?
Nobody showed up.
Well, including Tiger, but he at least has a legitimate excuse.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is kind of surprising. You've got the European tours now kicking into high gear, so you've got guys playing over there. It's coming close up to, the British Open's coming up, so.
You have to wonder if Tiger Woods was out playing more and didn't take from the Masters until the US Open off, if he wouldn't have been out on tour more, playing his normal, probably just three or four events additionally, if he wouldn't have been kind of pressing the flesh a little bit and trying to get guys to go to the tournament, kind of bending some wheels a little bit, like, you're coming, right? Uh-huh. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think so. You want to be on Tiger's good side. To come play his tournament, I think, is a no-brainer for a lot of these guys.
Well, especially after all he's done for not just the rank-and-file guys, but you know what? He's single-handedly increased, Phil Mickelson's, the size of Phil's house, the size of Phil's bank account, and so on. So, while at the same time beating him more often than he probably would have, but without Tiger, these guys would be making a lot less money.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
People talk about the snubs that, some guys give when they don't go to Byron Nelson's tournament or Ben Hogan's, and those are played on slightly older, quirkier courses. But then they talk about the snubs you get when you don't play Jack's tournament or Arnie's tournament. Tiger is that guy of this time. Show up, I would think. I'm not going to read too much into it, but it was interesting to see how many guys were missing.
Oh, yeah, very surprising. You saw it at the end. I mean, unfortunately, Anthony Kim, kind of ran away with it. Furyk was up there for a little while, but otherwise you're watching, Tommy Armour the third and Tom Pernice.
Right. Tom Pernice. No, he did not touch the ball with his putter, he says. But that was last year.
We'll let it go.
That about does it for episode 93 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. I think you know the spiel by now. I'm going to keep this short because we're running up on half an hour. So take care, and talk to you next week.
See ya.